My name is Handy Memela. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio Women, Children, and Presidency. In my office, remember to introduce myself.
My name is Kumbele Kedwu. I am the wife of the telephone.
My name is Alisa Nashoma. I'm the member of the committee. Thank you, Chair. My name is Nicole Kedwu, the member of the Fortune Committee. No college, by the way.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Alisa Nashoma, the member of the committee.
My name is Patricia Chun. Thank you. The old thing that I'm going to go.
My name is Sean. I'm from PSG.
Morning, Chair. Morning, honorable members. My name is Paul Abendjidani. I'm with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries at the Fisheries Branch.
Good morning. My name is Lebo
Hambutileng. My name is Lebo Hambutileng. I'm with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Edith Fritz. I'm the Director General for the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And what people currently neglect to say is that she's the Chief Director for Marine Resource Management. She's one of our few trained marine scientists, and she's currently the Acting Director General for Fisheries Management. And Leda Khan is the Chief Director responsible for capacity building. She was just promoted from Director to Chief Director position. I think it's important in the committee to just say that.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Soma Pramani from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in the DG's office of the support.
Honorable Chairperson, I must start with an apology. We are unaware that the presentations need to reach the committee the week before. We saw the submission presentation on Thursday, and it didn't go to the spot. It didn't answer all of the questions. And our colleagues do further work on it. I hope that it could get here on Friday. Understand that it only reached the committee yesterday, and I must apologize for that. There was I think it was in pursuit of giving the committee what it has asked for. The presentation still has limitations. I will point to them and share you can direct further how you'd like the limitations to be complemented. Jefferson, our presentation starts with quite a seminal report on the state of food and agriculture. It was based on research that was done by FAO. FAO is the United Nations Organization on Food and Agriculture. And I think it would be a useful report in the as a resource in the library of the committee. And this is extracted highlights of the report. And it says globally, women operate smaller farms, and on average, only half or two-thirds that large as farms operated by men. But women keep fewer livestock, typically of smaller breeds, and earn less from livestock than their own. They have greater overall workload that includes a heavy burden of low productivity activities like fetching water and firewood, which we're well aware of, have less education and less access to agricultural information and extension services, use less credit and financial services, are less likely to purchase inputs such as fertilizer, improved seed and mechanical equipment, and if they are employed, are more likely to be part-time, seasonal, or in low-paid jobs, and receive lower wages for the same work, even when they have the same experience and qualifications. The report concludes, given that unique picture, it concludes with something said very hopeful. It says that agricultural policies and programs aimed at closing the gender gap can generate significant gains for the agriculture sector, food security, and society as a whole. Women comprise on average 43% of agricultural labor force in developing countries. And this average ranges from 20% in Latin America to 15% in Eastern Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. And the activity contribution varies. That women in agriculture and rural areas have less access than men to productive resources and opportunities. So in the forms of assets, land ownership, inputs, etc. This goes on to say, closing the gender gap in agriculture would generate sufficient gains for the agricultural sector and society. If women had access to the same resources, productive resources as men, they could increase yield on their farms by 20 to 30%. This could raise total agricultural output in developing countries by 2.5 to 4%. Production gains of this magnitude could reduce the number of hungry people in the world by between 12 and 17%. The potential gains would vary by region depending on how many women are currently engaged in agriculture. And these potential gains are just the first round of social benefits that come from closing the gender gap. And this, when I joined the department, I had been at a UNCW meeting where this report was presented. And I introduced this narrative into the department. Because really up to that point, a lot of our targeting has been quite sort of gender blind. I think the sexism in agriculture has always been thought that men in the main should be involved in primary agriculture. I think these statistics are, and it's based on global research, it points to what it is we should do and the policy interventions that are required. So if the report goes on and it says policy interventions can close the gender gap in agriculture and rural development, and reform areas, priority reform areas include eliminating discrimination against women, excellence into agriculture, in access to agricultural resources, education, extension and financial services and labor markets, investing in labor saving and productivity enhancing technologies and infrastructure to free women's time for more productive activities, and facilitating the participation of women in flexible, efficient and fair labor markets. And it concludes with saying female farmers produce less than male farmers, but not because they are less efficient farmers. Extensive empirical evidence shows that the productivity gap between male and female farmers is caused by difference in input use. Chair, if I can then go on, having given that introduction in terms of the potential and the policy changes that are needed, if I can go on to share with the committee and honourable members the key programs in our department. Maybe the key program or intervention that we're really proud of is the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries Female Entrepreneur of the Year. It was actually started some 50 years back when Honourable Togo Dadiza was minister. And at the time it was called the Female Farmer of the Year. And when our mandate was expanded in 2007 to become Forestry, Fisheries, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the title was changed to be more inclusive. And it really was introduced as a program to correct the skewed participation of women in the sector and to acknowledge and encourage and increase the equal participation of women, young women and women with disabilities in agriculture, forestry and fisheries. And it has become the platform where you recognize the entrepreneurial skills of women in the sector and their involvement in the country's transformation. And it's a program that we've done annually. This is 1 year that we didn't celebrate it, when it's done in collaboration with provinces and other key stakeholders. They, in fact, the provinces go around and identify women in the sector. There'll be a provincial female farmer and now female entrepreneur of the year. And so far, Africa, South Africa has been our sponsor and has sponsored the activities for the past few years. And so over the years, a total of 80 women have been rewarded for their efforts and recognized that they are given access to technical resources, they get money, they get exposed to training and continue to remain in touch with them and monitor their performance. And in last year, we compiled a coffee table booklet on our Female Entrepreneur Award, and I will leave two copies with you, just where it celebrates the women that we have acknowledged over the years. Then there is the Agri-BEE Fund. The fund, it draws on the Agri-BEE Charter, and it is scoped and they try to intervene in the entire agricultural value chain, whether it is production or processing, marketing and distribution, and it seeks to promote the entry and participation of historically marginalized groups, including black women, in the entire agriculture, forestry and fisheries value chain, through the provision of funding for equity deals, acquisition of interest in agriculture entities and enterprise development. And out of a total of 3,750 who have been assisted through the Agri-BEE Fund, 2,240 or 59% of the beneficiaries have been women. Then there's another facility which we have. It's the Micro-Agricultural Financial Institutions of South Africa. The acronym for that is MAFISA. And it is a financial scheme that seeks to address the financial services needs of smallholder farmers. It provides capital loans of not more than 500,000 rand per person,
to enhance agricultural activities, to purchase inputs such as fertilizer, seeds, pesticides, animal feed, and small equipment. And a total of 7,100 women have been supported through MAVISA since 2009, and which constitutes 56.6% of the beneficiaries. And enterprises, 60% of the enterprises that have been funded within the area of sugar production, 6.3% in livestock, and 0.1% in grapes. The last program, which is probably most well known, is the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, known as CAP. And it has mainly aimed at providing post-settlement support to such beneficiaries with interest of land reform and other producers who have acquired land through private means and are engaged in value-adding enterprises or involved in export. The tax framework has been amended such that 70% of the tax infrastructure grant is allocated for food production initiatives, crop and livestock production, to support the effects of TARA program that was introduced, I think, around 2010. And since the inception of the program, of this TARA program in 2014, over 470,000 beneficiaries, and there's been so many beneficiaries, and women accounted for 42% of those beneficiaries. Another program is our Land Care program, and it deploys a number of techniques, as well as a soil care program, a salt care program, and water care. And basically directed at rehabilitating land and land that has lost some of its productive potential. Around 50% of the project allocations goes into labor wages and other allocations are obviously for technical inputs that are needed, the equipment, the material, and for skills development of beneficiaries. So it's one of our key interventions in creating green jobs. It's targeted to achieve over 800,000 work opportunities, which is equivalent to 3,800 full-time equivalents. And during the current financial year, we are targeting to create 900 full-time equivalents. It presents a huge opportunity for many unemployed people, possibly young people and young girls, in the because it runs according to the EPWP principles. And according to the EPWP, this program was awarded last year because it was, in terms of its employment generating capacity, the number of jobs that are created out of the money allocated. And in the 14-15 financial year, there were 2,602 jobs created. And 1,152 of those were women. That would account for 52%. The last category chair is just a table on our DCAS mental statistics. And I'm sorry that it ends there. My colleagues are just distributing a spreadsheet that just could give you a different look at those statistics. What those statistics say is that um, 45% of our overall staff in the department are 46% are women. And then of the senior management members. 41% of our senior management members are women. And we can say that over the last 18 months or so, we have been quite clear and quite deliberate in driving that. I think they should be focused just about this year. Just about. So, and we lost at the, so we recognize that women constitute 52% of the population. We are not there yet, but I think that we can, if we were to show the gender representation in senior management over a number of years, the statistics will show that there has been a progressive increase rather than a regression in those figures. So here, that's where I will stop the presentation. The limitations which I referred to initially was the committee also asked the geographic allocations where these beneficiaries are and the budgetary allocations for those programs. That this gender disaggregation wasn't done in time and I could I can provide that information. We certainly do have that. So my apologies for not filling the giving you the full brief, Chairperson.
May I then say I give the time for clarities or questions? Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Chief, just to appreciate your presentation. My questions are in terms of empowering women. Are you satisfied that the last 20 years the department has empowered women in such a way that it has eliminated, it's moving towards eliminating poverty? I would have loved your presentation to be South African orientated, taking into consideration the history of South Africa. One, women in South Africa basically have been key in cultivating the land, and the department should have taken that into a historic perspective, that they are the ones that are sitting in poverty, they are the ones that are unemployed, they are the ones that are sitting in inequality all over our country, and that should be your baseline. And your budget, you haven't said anything about your budget being women oriented. So where do you want to take your department in terms of women, taking into consideration that you are a woman, taking into consideration that some of your chief directorates are women? I don't want to talk about numbers. I want to talk about effectiveness of the department on the ground, implementing things that we can visibly see. So far you haven't told me how many farms are owned by women. In the last 20 years, where did you empower women and how did you empower them? How do you envisage to take it forward in terms of those three that I have mentioned? And those three are mentioned basically in the NDP. How do you take the NDP forward? The NDP is very lean on women. And you being a DG as a woman, you should be the one that is saying, in this program, we're going to ensure that 60% is accessible to women. Don't just make it accessible. Make efforts as a developmental state, taking people by the hand, showing them where the progress of the department are. One of the examples that I can give you, which is very simple, all departments, even agricultural department, I challenged it in Gauteng, for instance, where I have a constituency, it's in Hammanskraal, it's semi-rural. Each and every house has a chicken. Each and every house has a tree called all these other fruit trees. You can call mango, you can call what is that, avocado, you can call peach, you can call all of them. But I haven't seen the department going into those houses, showing them how those trees can eradicate poverty in their households. Those are just simple things that the department should have done in the last 20 years, despite there is no money involved in you as a department helping those families to eradicate poverty in their household. Those houses are dependent on social grants. Most of them are dependent on social grants. That is one thing the department should have done. Secondly, in that particular area, there are cattle, sheep, goats that are moving around, eating sows around. I haven't seen the department coming in and saying, you can go there and control your stock in this way. You can help them to get grazing land or advise them to even purchase whatever grazing material, and they can use whatever stock that they have to ensure that their lives are being bettered. And this is a department that is agriculture. The third thing that I also would have loved the department to do was to do small fish ponds in each and every house. Each and every house can have a fish pond. I mean, producing a fish is something very simple. And if you really want to eradicate poverty, you should have had in those houses, especially those that are getting grants. These are indigenous families. Each and every house would have produced a fish to eat every day. And eating a fish is even healthier than eating meat. So why the department is not involved in poverty alleviation programs that can ensure that our people go out of their poverty? And no, I don't think there is much money involved in it. If it's going to be a lot of money, why don't you get one street having a fish pond, carrying that fish pond, if it is a lot of money? So is it money that is involved, or is it knowledge, or is it skills that are a problem in your department? I'm not sure. You are not highlighting those issues. You have all that 3,000. I'm not sure how many mills you have. 3,000, what? Mills are even more. But mills in South Africa have never been involved in agriculture. They have always sat around and sat under a tree and drank liquor. And that's their history. So why are you still having that 3,000, whatever, human resource in that department? I involved one of the officials that were employed by Gauteng in agriculture, and when I engaged him in putting down, planting a simple thing, spinach, on the ground, and he said, I have never planted a spinach. I have never. And that guy told me on my face, he has never planted, and I was planting those spinach. I am not an agricultural specialist. I have never studied. I did study agriculture because it was under apartheid and we were forced to study agriculture. I have planted spinaches, cabbage, and all that. All those things that I have done in primary, all the things that I have done in primary, I can still use them today to feed my family. But why you have officials, if that one official who's in the agricultural department can say to me, he cannot do it, when I ask him to come and help me in my constituency to alleviate this thing, poverty, then he tells me he can't plant his spinach. So how many other officials do you have that are sitting in those desks that are doing absolutely nothing? Because agriculture is a practical thing. You have to go on the ground. How many agricultural schools have we reopened since the last 20 years? How many agricultural schools have you reopened because they were, most of them were closed? I don't have much questions. I have any questions, ma'am. It's just that I'm not getting the answer. The last time we called an official from your department, I forgot her name, you will remind me, Chair, who was the name of the official. But that official could hardly give us the answers that we wanted. I'm hoping you, as the person who's in charge, you're going to give us answers, because we really need to progress. We can't keep on telling our people that we are not able to help them. There are no exit programs that are done nationally by your department helping social development to eradicate poverty, making sure that those people that are queuing every day for government money are going out having skills that are going to help them to run their own lives rather than sit in the queue of social development. So I need programs that can show them that these programs are going to take our people out of poverty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. She's just nice.
What did you say?
She's
just nice. Oh my God.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I just have a couple of questions. Actually, this is one of the departments that has the potential to actually improve unemployment in the country. And it's something that is not taken seriously, and it's very disturbing, I think, not only to just us as a committee, to the South Africans as a whole. We have land that is extremely underutilized in South Africa. You drive, yesterday I was driving from my constituency going back to my home and into the Free State, and there's plenty of land that is not utilized at all. And you say that you have this program, it's called MASIFA, that is financing women up to 500,000 rand. What is that? What is that? Is it supposed to create jobs? 500,000 rand? That is one of the things. You say that the population of the market is about 52% of the population is women. And you are financing them up to 500,000 rand for farming. That is chicken feed. Sorry to say. And it just seems nowhere. What are you supposed to do? Buy land with that? What, you know, it's just not sufficient. Sorry to say that. And the other thing, that's basically what I want to say. They're not talking about Standard Bank. They're not talking about APSA. They're not talking about the High Street Bank. What are they doing to ensure that women are being financed? Because that is the deterrent for women to actually be able to access funding. Not also even funding only. Women are willing to get loans to actually be financed so that they can be able to farm. That is actually my point, the finance issue. And also, with my sister, do you have a budget? How much is it? How much have they given out to women? Because as far as I'm concerned, 500,000 is very little, which is the maximum. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief. Let me also appreciate the presentation. Though joining other members said we are not convinced as members of parliament representing the women out there. Because when we are doing our work on a daily basis, women are faced with challenges, in especially in the rural areas. There's high unemployment, there's illiteracy, you know, there's poverty in our areas. So we have confidence that this department can change the life of our people in the ground. So what I also want to check, because the presentation is not detailed. You know, as members of parliament, we want to see if you are saying you have allocated this much to the women, or 1,000 women have benefited from this program. We want a detailed program. We want a detailed list of people who have benefited from that program. Where are they coming from? How much have you been allocated? Have allocated to, you know, are those programs or those projects sustainable? That's what we want, so that when we do our oversight, we can be able to visit those projects. That's what we want as members of parliament, and we can be able to, you know, talk about those programs, even if we have not seen them. But at least we'll have an idea of where are those programs, how much have been allocated to each program. And secondly, I just want to check with you. Do you have a gender focal point person in your department who's dealing directly with gender issues, and especially in decision making? Because in any department, we do have that person, but is occupying a junior position. He does not have any clue, actually. and any say of what agenda, or what issues females are supposed to push in terms of gender matters. And the other issue, in terms of your employment, do you have people with disabilities in the department? We are having a challenge in terms of employment of people with disabilities. They're not in the statistics. And the other issue, your land care project. Let me start with the CASP. I must appreciate, you know, in my constituency, there's this project of the department is giving them the livestock. I don't know what you call the project, but I think it's part of your CASP program. I must appreciate it because that program is running, it's managed properly, and I must appreciate that. But in terms of other projects, you know, I had some land care projects in my position, but as I'm speaking, they are dead. Those projects are dead, and it tells me that there's no monitoring tool in your department. We had very effective extension officers previously, but I must say now, as I'm speaking, I don't know whether they're still there, they're still communicating with our communities. Are they still have, you know, this loan, we're talking about the Agri-BEE fund. This is the first time I heard about it. Do you have any mechanism of publicizing, of going to the communities and talk about your services? Because that's what we want. Women are there, but they don't know what programs are you offering at the department. And the when you have allocated money to a project, do you have a way of monitoring that project? Because I've got another project, I think I'll get details in written, maybe after getting your contact at DG. I've got a program, I think it's a, I don't know what do they call that program. But as I'm speaking, oh, it's a new project. They build is it a silo? We call it a silo or something. A silo, yes. It was opened by the premier of the province in Mpumalanga maybe 2 years back. But as I'm speaking, that program has collapsed. That project has collapsed. So do you have a way of mentoring, of sustaining, you know, of monitoring your project? Because there's no way that government can pump a lot of money to our people, but at last, those programs are dead. Do you have the programs of those programs of mentoring young emerging entrepreneurs? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. Mine is just a short one. As a starting point, I would think it's important that women get land. I'll talk mainly about the rural areas where I come from, my constituents. Most land is owned by men. And as I speak, they're brutalized. And I can assure you, even if women would want to get that land, they would not be able to get it because men is their land. So the department can just do some spot checking. I'll talk about Umhlophe, where they come from. Ward 17, the land. Ward 18, there's no activity that is taking place in terms of agriculture. And yet, when we grew up, those lands are the lands that were used to even educate us. But today, they are just stagnant. And I'm sure if they can be allocated to women, something would definitely take place. Also, I'd request that if your department can introduce food gardens, little things like cabbage, carrots, that kind of thing, so that each and every homestead has got a garden instead of having to go and buy even spinach. Really, and that is something that can be promoted by the agricultural people, because I understand each and every municipality has agricultural officers. You find that in some areas they are active, in some areas they are just sitting in the desk. also they can promote chicken production, because that is the simplest thing that women are also able to do. No household should not have a chicken. They get eggs. At least that can alleviate poverty, because now the dependency is so much in shops, which is very, very sad. And lastly, I also am a bit worried about the amount of money that is being allocated by the department to women. I don't know, something needs to be done, because really, if we need to alleviate poverty, we need to up that money. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to repeat what my colleagues are raising here, some of my concerns. The only thing that is not clear to us is to how many women from black areas that are included in that 2,240 women. It's not clear for us. We want to know how many women from the government. Secondly, Chair, as my colleagues say, so that there are many women in rural areas, they have land. What criteria are using to go down to the rural areas, like to call the Imbizo so that they can be informed about this department? Also, these women that are working for the farm, some of them are out of those farms. What is your role to assist those women to become a farmers? Let me stop the attention.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for having the presentation. As the department shows that women are the ones who are facing more challenges on equality over unemployment. We'd also mention skills shortage in every village, as well as the financial resources is one of the issues that we are facing, challenges that are facing women. What is the department do to make sure that women do benefit, especially those in rural, the ones in rural areas, of which they have fields to use, as fancy in those fields? For instance, in KZN is a program which is called One Home, One Garden, but it is not useful because there is no water. Whether the department is also working with the Department of Water to make sure that the supply water tends to all households. And we have seen Abelulegi, which are project advisors. How are you making sure that people do go to the communities and advise them to get help on those programs, on the agricultural program, mm-hmm. for the community to fight poverty and hunger? And whether do you have any programs with schools to advise learners to choose agriculture as their career, future career? Thank you.
Honorable member, please come to us. Actually, not satisfied yourself with questions that I have. Ms. Trail, answer.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted the department just to give us an understanding in terms of forestry. How can we help women to get into the industry? Because there are plants in South Africa which you can use for cloth. There are plants that you can use for paper. How do they help women? I don't know what other things that trees have. They know better. They must educate me and tell me how we're going to ensure that women get into those industries. And then even which fisheries, they must tell us exactly how we're going to get into those fisheries. There are women in the coast. And these women in the coast, how can we help them to get in there? They understand the subject better. I want them to unpack those two. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I think that was my question on forestry and fisheries. So the department is not talking about it. It was only focusing on the agricultural part. And one other thing, Chair, in terms of monitoring the department, you know, because the department previously, they have allocated tractors to our communities. But I must say, just come to my area in Marapian, there are too many tractors that the department is not accountable to. They don't know where they are. Each and every person has just given themselves this tractor. You know, there were small tractors before they've given us a different term. There were small tractors. I know the responsibility of the municipality. You know, it's a joint program. We must be able to make oversight and account for that. But we need the advice, you know, of the department. We want you to be at the forefront of this program. There are lots of share of equipment, of machinery on the ground, but surely the department is not accomplished, not knowing where is tractor number one, tractor number two. They don't know where they are, as I'm speaking. Thank you.
And there's
this technical DTI. What role are you playing in the DTI? How do you force DTI? Oh, there's a goal. You're not saying anything about AGOA, and you are agriculture. So there's that big issue of AGOA agreement that you have with America. You're not telling us what role are you playing in ensuring that South Africa takes control over it. How are we going to ensure, if America says tomorrow, I'm not going to give you anything, what programs do you have in place to replace, those people that are going to be unemployed? What are you going to say about them? How do you ensure that whatever that you are sending to America, you can take it and sell it in South Africa, or and take it and sell it somewhere in Africa? You're not saying anything about having relationships with African countries. You're not saying anything, opening even markets for farmers in South Africa. You're not telling us much, Vichy and your team. There are issues, the issue of science and technology. How the science and technology in farming help women to be commercial farmers? How are you going to ensure that our women, because they don't have any skills in technologies, they don't have any skills, and those that are coming in, that are in school, saying, giving batteries, you try to encourage kids to get into agriculture and whatever and ever. How are you influencing the curriculum in terms of agriculture? Because everything that we buy in the store is agriculture. So how are you influencing children to understand that everything comes from the soil? So how will kids understand that there is a need, that they must produce their own things in their own country and all that? You have to play that role to ensure that you conscientize our kids to do that. Your medicine science thing is still very slim. Are you working with other departments? Why are you concentrating on medicine science? Is agriculture only medicine science there? What about those that are not doing medicine science? How are you going to help them to ensure that they understand what you're doing in the department? Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Of course, a few questions. The AgriBEES BEE fund, there was quite a chunk of money taken back. Why was it not utilized? And the amount is 231 million that had to go back to Treasury. Why was that? When there's so much outcry there, especially in rural areas. And what have you done about the mismanagement? In doing everything in February 2014, the department said only one of six projects was funded. So what's the current status of the fund presently?
2,140. When, where, how?
And who?
I'll echo the outcry of the other members here around this 500,000. Is it a Trump stock figure? Some people are actually struggling very hard to pay back the loans. How do you expect them actually to be able to get any money in their hands when the conditions are so bad? Who has done the assessment of the program? Is it the PME? Then what are the outcomes? I listened to you talking about land care. Is the program not the same as EQWP? And how sustainable is this program? And I'm still very, very interested to know the percentage of disabled people. When I look back as a young girl, in our family I had a granny who had a shorter leg. But when you look at her budget, it was the best. They have means of utilizing whatever is there. They're capable of actually bringing the targets and the outcomes to the top. But it seems as if we are just building a wall between us and them. I will take away what people can do well, without being healthy as I am sitting here. The worst thing that worries me is we have so many specialists at different levels in South Africa, but we're still so dependent on the outside world. We African, we're proud of being African. We're capable of doing most of the things our way. So all those educated people in the different departments, especially agriculture, should be watching the talk. They must always be there to hold Tandy's hand and show her where the shortcomings are, and then educate me to a level that is going to be able to help me to earn a living. We are still failing. And agriculture is one of the programs that can make a change in South Africa. We start with the schools, so the program, I don't know, maybe you know doing it, where every school will have a garden. And the product from this is sold to the community, and they've already done their homework and are able to point out of 250 kids, this percentage is kids from very impoverished homes, and they've got a bit of those, you know, the outputs of their programs given to them. And that's the way we can actually change the lives of the people. And I'm saying this because where I was working for the municipality, the program has been going on. And it's actually cutting down even on the number of kids that are fed at schools, and some of their products are helping those feeding schemes. We're looking at practicalities here, and let's actually ensure that as South Africans we can use what is there in front of us, it's happening in front of us, and have ways of improving those programs and even educating those people who are there. And that is how we can then have kids that finish off in matric and go and do something else in agriculture. In fisheries. We've got so many wetlands. So many. And it's the women who are actually involved in the wetlands. Why not then pull them out of the mud and educate them? And South Africa tomorrow will be very proud. Thank you.
Agriculture, forestry and fisheries as a sector has the ability or has been recognized as the catalyst for economic growth. And it's also the vehicle that can be most inclusive. I think as honorable members have said, there is no evidence and the reason why people who have been previously marginalized, women, youth, people with living with disabilities, black people, whoever, should not be included. So there's a lot of hope. And then we're talking across there about all of these programs that will grow the economy. Agriculture is seen as the low-hanging fruit because it's not like an SKA building. It doesn't really require rocket science. And I think we echo the sentiments that members have expressed, that our people know how to work the land. Mothers and women in particular know how to work the land. I'm probably revealing my age here when I say I remember when my mother once cooked, she sent me to the garden to go get onion and some beans. And these days we send our children to the spaza shop. So when there is the money to go to the spaza shop, people are hungry. And so how do we reclaim that? So I think part of the problem here is, and we've quite worked out the formula, is, and I really present this to seek guidance, is the issue of concurrency. Because we do not implement. We, as the National Department, set the policies and the ledger and provinces implement. Even the CASP, the conditional grant. So the conditional grants are a land care are implemented through the provinces. We should, this is in fact the time when we are busy working with Treasury and we decide on the policy criteria. How the fund must be targeted. But CASP, Eliminate CIMA are Schedule 4 grants. It means they are viewed as being additional to the equitable share. And we can set the criteria. Provinces give us business plans according to that. We test whether it meets the criteria, and ultimately they do the implementation. And it becomes a huge issue of tension when officials from the national office go past the provincial counterpart and go and try and do something on the ground. So I think that's a part of what we have to get right. And I will talk about that. I take the point that Honorable Chair mentioned about that wanting to that this presentation should have been located in the position of South African women in society. And I think that is a limitation, and I pride myself as being a woman activist, and a phrase that I use in the department. And one is well aware of the poverty statistics and that women, that more women than men are poor. It's more difficult for women to escape poverty or even the impact of the natural disasters around climate change. I'm aware that gender budgeting was departments was required to do that, and I think at some stage there were almost parallel budget systems when the Office of the Status of Women would ask the Minister of Finances, the budget vote would give that evaluation. And I think that we have lost that edge. I really am not prepared to sub stuff, and I can say that this aggregation of being able to say how much of our budget is allocated to women and spent on women, it is not on our radar. And I'm ashamed to acknowledge that that is. I'm not prepared to sort of hide behind that. What is true is that in our CASP program, the conditional grant, the two conditional grants accounts for, if our budget for the year is about 6.7 billion rand, then around 2.2 of that amount goes towards CASP. And in fact, about 69% of my budget are transfers. That's 2.2 to provinces, transfers to entities, etc. So CASP, that is a huge chunk. 40% of that budget, a criteria in there is that it needs target women. So this in terms of the implementation of our program, we have put that there. How many farms are owned by women? In South Africa, the land audit has not been completed. There's a land audit, and it's just been done on state land that is done by rural development. Our job is to compile a farm register. That is a unit of work that is incomplete because it takes huge resources, and it's something that is on the agenda right now. So I'm not able to answer the question of how many farms are owned by women. On the land audit that has been done, I'd like to come back to members on this, whether there is a gender disaggregation available. Something which the Chief Surveyor General has said is that post-94, legislation changed where it was no longer needed to show the race classification on the deeds, you know, the property deeds. And therefore, even though they have done the land audit, they've done the flyover, they were able to say the size of the land and say whoever owned, but they're unable to say in terms of the race of people, the owners of the land that they have surveyed. And I trust that they are able to do the gender, but I'd like to come back and give that information. But I do know that is a shortcoming. So, how do we plan to take the NDP forward? I guess the important targets that fall in our mandate through our Council 7 in particular, the number of smallholders supported, the 300 new smallholders, 300,000, the million jobs created in the sector, the underutilized land, the million hectares that is under production. And we are only beginning to, let me put it differently, that in South Africa we don't have a unified, standardized definition of a smallholder farmer. There's no such definition across government, where Stats South Africa, DTI, ourselves, rural development uses the same definition. In fact, what Stats, so smallholder farmer is a being for which our statistical instruments are statistically blind to it. They look at households involved in agricultural activities, and then they will look at the size of the land that households use. The numbers we use for smallholders are inferred from those statistics from Stats South Africa. So what we completed last year was to get everybody together in the same room and agree. So what we have now are a set of norms and standards drawing on what everybody's definitions, whereas the in South Africa, a subsistence for households from household agricultural activity is defined as a subsistence farmer is defined as these criteria, smallholders, etc., etc. And we are in those different categories of agricultural productivity along the whole value chain. These are the services and finance services, with technical services and financial services that you are entitled to. And that, we are hoping that that norms and standards have been completed, that by September it will be a policy framework that will be out for consultation. And that, I believe, will go a long way in addressing several of the questions that were answered, that were asked this morning. Because it will say government and its entities give records, says you are a smallholder if you meet six of these criteria, and these are services that you will be entitled to. I take the point about people don't know about Agri-BEE, Mafisa being a drop in the ocean, etc. But I think it should also be seen in context of, for example, last year, the DG of National Treasury got ourselves, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and the Land Bank in the same room. So if we look at the money that is available from the national fiscus for agriculture and rural development, it amounts to around 74 billion for the year. If you include in that the 34 billion rand loan book of the land bank. And so the question that we have to say is, are these optimally applied? And where are the overlaps? And where do we eliminate the overlaps? When I take the questions that honorable members have raised about land care, but land care sister is the animal and fowl program of rural development. And I think it's the river catalytic program. So there are programs that look exactly the same. And this one should go back to rural development department, which was only created in 2009. But Treasury has assisted us in duplicating funding. Why have they given money to another department to do the same thing, even though it's called a different name? But we can't just sort all of that out. So I think that, so you've got these funds. For example, I believe that Mafisa is a small amount, and what is at risk or something about Mafisa is the interest rates are fairly high. At the same time, there is a rural development has a grant for agricultural production and funding, which is much higher. That, and they don't pay that because it's not known, it's a grant. So we've got this consistent almost policy implement because it was introduced at a different time by a different department, but we're trying to bring all of that together.
we're working on an integrated financing model. I think what if we complete these, this comprehensive framework of reducer support that the norms and standards will fit into, it also needs to be supported by an integrated funding model. Because you can, I imagine what we suspect is that there are farmers that are getting the calls from a number of us in the sector, and the one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. So, and again, because these tables among us, so these are the DGs of the various departments, are working together and trying to bring back that integration. Isn't the household level agriculture chair? In September 2013, there was a policy approved, the Integrated Food and Nutrition Policy. And that policy, I think, was introduced by ourselves, but co-sponsored by the Department of Social Development. That policy has two legs. What is called a social response that looks at the household level intervention, indigenous families, families on social care, and the productive response. And the way in which we bring those two together is we are the owners of that policy. So we have an interdepartmental forum on food and nutrition security so that we are able to report in a coordinated way. We do some household intervention, but the main drivers of the household level intervention, I think you made the reference to the program, Chair, the one household, one garden, one school, one garden, one clinic, one garden, and that is a program that is very strongly driven by the Department of Social Development.
That the program, very strong program of agriculture in the school. And I am talking about something that I got involved in, and this is the case that it's still going on. And that is why most of the kids who were doing the trick have decided they're going to go to varsity and explore all the avenues. Remember, most of the kids in school today, often you find tired, battered students in those schools. And that is why I'm crying out to them. And I might just add one area that is really very disturbing. It seems as if there's no synergy in the work that is being done. And if I'm wrong, you can throw it in my face. And once we don't have synergy, the road on the other side of the hill is bad.
Chairperson, I believe that we are you are right in your sense that I guess I won't put it to sound there's no synergy, but there isn't sufficient synergy. And I think in part it's got to do with
We should be able to deliver a far more, we should be able to be far more effective in ensuring household level food security, etc., etc. Then I must just stop talking for a while and just let one of my colleagues talk to some of the interventions at school and the DVD.
Can I just interview you? We're not rubbing salt into the cup, but just stating facts. And when I spoke, when I made reference to synergy, unationness, and we have to ensure that what you are actually saying must be done by province, you do oversight on that, because after that, the province will ensure that local government, that is now the municipalities, you name it, are actually doing the work as prescribed. That way, this is why we have NCOP. NCOP is doing dirty work for all the departments. But unfortunately, the reports that come back are not taken seriously. And when I was talking about synergy, that is what I meant. You can continue from where you left off because I can see some hands coming up.
Chief, maybe let me just pause for a while and we just have Lebu speak about some of the programs that we are involved in maybe the last point that you mentioned in encouraging young people and women in particular to follow careers in agriculture. Safe to say, one of the issues that my minister has taken up is, as far as we know, the demise almost of agriculture as a subject in schools. I think there are just a few. It's no longer a standing curriculum in high schools, in schools. Yeah, and there are few very few agricultural schools which we know where they are, and it is something which my minister is championing and is engaged education on, because what is true, if you look around, is that farmers, policy makers, researchers are aging, and we have to grow the next generation of people who will drive the sector at the number of levels. My colleague, the CEO of ARC, for example, says in the next 2 to 3 years, 60% of these senior researchers will be retiring. So what do? We have to have a program of growing the next sector. But let me be able to just talk about all of the capacity building areas.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will talk to, I know two questions were asked relating to what are we doing to promote careers in agriculture to young people in rural areas. And the second question that was an add-on to that was saying, we're talking of those careers in math and science, but what are we doing to those that are not necessarily interested in doing academic schooling but want to be primary producers? So I'll address those two questions. First, the one on, we've got a program in the department called Career Awareness Program. Mm-hmm. This program targets school-going children, and our focus there is farm schools, and then we target children of farm workers. We target also agricultural high school. In the country, we've got a number of 34 agricultural high schools. And I'm going to acknowledge here that not in all those agricultural high schools is agriculture taken as a subject. But we did our research, close to 15 of those schools, agriculture is taken as a subject. And we're also focusing on rural high schools. You don't just have to be good in mathematics and science and be in a school anyway. We've got our own criteria of addressing those that are in rural areas. And what we do, which is different from what other departments are doing in this regard, we don't rush to go to matriculants. We start this learners at grade 11. So we share the idea, we've got booklets, we've got DVD that we go around targeting those high schools. And I possibly ask that, how do you know that those schools are rural? We work with the Department of Education, they give us a list of their rural high schools. Then we go to those schools and target those learners that are interested in pursuing agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. And we don't end a learner kind of a relationship. We get parents who most of them would be like subsistence farmers that would have their home gardens there. Those would really say, I would want to see my child pursuing agriculture. And we sign a consent form with the parents because we cannot just see the copter in the school and agree with the student that we will see them through. And we take those students from grade 11. Immediately when they matriculate, late, they don't compete with other students that will be applying for our bursary. They are automatically, they meet a requirement of university. And I need also to inform honorable members that we don't leave it to those students to apply on their own at universities. We've got an arrangement with universities that we have faculty of agriculture. It's us who go to those faculties with a list of our high school learners and say, here's a list of learners that we are funding. Please reserve this number of spaces depending on our bursary scheme. Because our bursary scheme is close to, I know it's nothing, it's between 14 million, which is really nothing. But we take those learners throughout until they matriculate. One thing that I need to also inform honorable members is that we don't just fund everything in agriculture. We've got what we call a list of scarce and critical skills. So we would choose those that at high school level they don't know what they want to do. And from there we do follow up in our monitoring visits to those schools to tell them that here is a list of options that you can just do. The second option that honorable member asked about, now what if you are a young person, you're not interested into the academic path, but you are a child of a farm worker, all what you know is farming, that's where you were born in. We've got a new developed strategy, we call it Developing Young Producer Strategy. That one is for entrepreneurs or young people who want now to be hands-on. And in that one, we go to already existing projects. It will be an aquaculture project, a livestock project in the vicinity or in that farm. And we take this young person, we don't take them to school. We make an arrangement with the project, they work in there and they get mentoring throughout that program. I know one shortfall in that strategy of us is some of them want their own land. To say, I'm working in this project, but I want now to expand. And it's one other area that we are looking at. Thank you, Chair.
May I just interject? Just back to yourself. Kids in townships are excluded. Yes. And yet, there are kids who are in some of the township schools who have an interest in actually doing agriculture further. And this is why I spoke of the school's program. So then clearly says it's after them. Yes, for fighting for rural people to be given the first try. But I think, could you then spread your wings and do feasibility study in some of the townships? I'm here to be corrected. Maths is not the criteria. Is maths not the criteria in this program? I will need a clear answer to that. And I will lose it for saying
that. I guess, Chair, that the issue is at some point there was a deliberate decision to target rural schools. Rural schools, and particularly after the 2012 unrest on farm, it was to target the schools where we could target the children of farm workers. And as Leo said, the fund is very small. So I think the townships are included and we can provide that breakdown. But we favor rural schools. Rural schools, the township schools are completely excluded. I think what we need to do is to come and show you a breakdown. I think I'd like to talk also to cover the area level of forestry, because of how I think the last time you showed me that of the 200-odd new people we're funding this year, 95 are forestry, some of them, there's the postgraduate, and maybe also cover the things on fisheries and aquaculture, just talk to the overseas programs as well, because it doesn't just end with high school. So just if Jesh, and there's a few minutes, just say a little bit more about the program.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. We do cover our bursary scheme, because this career awareness program is funded through our bursary scheme rather. It's not only focusing, like DG says, the bulk is we favour rural schools, but townships and even people from those that need requirements are funded, not only rural schools. I'm going to be specific in answering the question of saying, is mathematics a requirement for bursary and admission into university structure degree? Yes, mathematics is a requirement. But additional to that, part of our bursary, we fund those students that go to our agricultural colleges. And then math is not necessarily a requirement. Then we fund them even when they did not do mathematics, because those agricultural colleges are our interest in agriculture, because actually that is our springboard of producing hands-on agriculture primary producers. Getting to the how then do we integrate forestry and fisheries in this programs? From 2010, after we reconfigured to have forestry and fisheries in our responsibility, one college of agriculture, specifically Fort Cox Agricultural College, is the one that we fund students that do forestry management, that do civiculture, which is a program in agriculture. So we also do cover students that do forestry in this program. With fisheries as well, we do fund those that do oceanology, marine resources, and marine biology. And with this, those two, we even take students outside the country, particularly to China, to study those programs. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. What I would have loved this panel to tell us is, in terms of the skills that we need of agriculture, are we doing sufficient in the last 20 years? How many have we developed? And then is it enough that the agricultural schools, I mean, basically you say in rural areas there are 34 agricultural high schools, but in those high schools it doesn't mean each and every child is interested in agriculture. And do we have the capacity, the human resource we need to feed South Africa, taking the 51 million population? Are you doing enough to feed South Africa, producing the human resource that we need? We will go and work in the farms. Are the farms that we have enough? Are we still going to be dependent? How long are we going to be dependent on fresh produce that is coming from outside? How long are we going to be dependent on those? So your analysis should be based on how do you reduce your imports in terms of fresh produce. That can be done in South Africa by yourself. And you must identify which products you are targeting that we're going to reduce. By the year 2030, how many will we have reduced in terms of the NDP? And then the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the land audit. The DG said the land audit is a problem, and it is deterring you from doing what you want to do. I don't think it is a deterrent. What you need to do, where there are deterrents, you have to have MOUs and say, in terms of this development, this is what we want to do. And then the province, what is it that you're doing? Then you complement what the province is doing in that particular area. Find out what is the local government doing. It's your duty to find out on 3 spheres of government, what is the exemption that you're doing? There's no need for duplication. What it's even worse that there is duplication at national departments. Land affairs is not at local government. Land affairs is not there at provincial government. It's at national. So it is national that is controlling land affairs. And you can sit on in a boardroom, sit down and plan together, create problems that complement each other. So there is no contradiction that that can detain from implementing anything. And then in terms of land that is used by tribal authorities, we have tribal authorities everywhere, but wherever they are, we understand that tribal land is on the so-called, what the Boers used to call it, reserves, where there was no rain, whatever. But you have to give us alternatives. We can't move people out of there. In Israel, there's a desert, but we're eating a tomato that is coming from Israel. So if Israel can produce a tomato, it means that South Africans can produce more. We have more rain than Israel. If we have more rain than Israel, it means that we must be better than Israel. So DG, you're not telling me anything that you can do. There shouldn't be the word can't in your vocabulary. They shouldn't be, because there are people dying every day who are not eating, and you can help them to eat every day. There should be a tomato that they must eat. Even if it's not a tomato, a tomato is just a figure of speech. Yeah. I nearly said it in soot, because that's the first word that came into my mind. But I'm just saying, the agricultural department should not tell us that the reserves, they can't produce anything. That these things that they are called boreholes, how many people have you trained to do boreholes in Transkei? I'll call them in their homeland, in the Boer, in wherever, in the Northwest. How many people have you trained as a department to produce, to so that they can produce food in the land that they have? Those are tribal lands. You don't need lease agreements. You don't need, what is that you use? The surveyor. What is that? Surveyor general, the deeds office. You don't need those. You just go to the chief and agree with the chief in terms of this program. We want you to produce tomatoes that we want to supply to PNP. We are building a mall here. There's a mall that the DTA is building, or whoever the municipality that is given to build them. Even those malls that are in our township are not supplied by our own people. I mean, simple things. Those are just simple things that we can do. So I would want the department 20 years down the line to come and tell me, what is it that you're doing for Transkei, that we don't see people going into Gauteng looking for jobs? We don't see people coming from the Western Cape. What are you doing about the Western Cape people? Are you teaching them on how to plant their own thing, which is banking rooibos? And why is it a rooibos? Because there is a name that you can use besides rooibos. I don't know, but there's a person name called something. It was not rooibos. But why our people are not owning our own indigenous products that are in South Africa? This department, what is it doing to help our people live on our own indigenous land, which they have lived on for years? Just like that, in Limpopo, in Gauteng, you can live on peaches. Why are our people still not selling peaches? Why are they have peaches in those guys. Why are they not selling those peaches? In Indonesia, there are programs that are done by ordinary people collecting each and every house, products that are done by each and every household. Why are we not using the same methods? What is stopping us? Because we used to do that. We used to collect bones from each and every yard in the township, in Harangua. I'm not telling you about a rural area in Limpopo. I'm telling you about a town. I grew up in a township. Every day there were people collecting bones. And when you give them bones, they give you 10 shillings. So why can't we do the same method, collect peaches each and every house? In December, there are peaches in each and every house. Every person must send in a gate and be given money for producing those peaches. But we must have the people going house to house. There were people coming house to house to teach us on how to maintain our yards. But why are we not as the people coming to help people understand that they can produce potatoes that can be collected at the gate and be given money? So I don't want to sit here and apologize that we can't do anything. I want to go to our people. I'm a public representative. I want the department to tell me, how do we help our people go out of the state of I cannot do anything, to the state that I can do something for myself, not wait for them. They have two hands, two legs that they can use. Even those that do not have legs and arms, they can do something about their lives. Thank you very much.
I haven't answered all the questions. I haven't answered all the questions yet. Can I continue with the first round, if I may, please? I think the set of questions, a lot of the questions asked, is there a human resource plan for the sector? Do we know what the skills are that the country needs in order to ensure food security? I think that the short answer is no, there is not. We have a sense of inventory of fair skills, and we do something about. But the good thing is that we're on our way there. Honourable members will remember that in the State of the Nation, the President announced that we will be approving this agricultural policy action plan, and also announced the 9 priorities with after energy, the revitalization of the agriculture and agro-processing value chain being right up there. So in that, the level of analysis and science and detail that we have, we can, for example, say, what is the value chains that we will be focusing on in the next few years, is poultry. We are able to say, over the last, from 2009 until 2012, the demand for poultry, what meat, has increased by 34%. Based on these figures, between now and 2030, the demand for poultry will increase by 38%. How much, if you are able to say, how much of that demand is imported, and lots of them import from Portugal, the USA, Brazil. So if we want to, and our interest is to, as honourable members say, increase production so that we have available sufficient amounts of food, locally produced food, ramp up exports and reduce the number of imports. So we say you can't just increase poultry production. 60% of the input cost in poultry is feed. Chicken eat this soy oil cake. So over the next, between now and 2019, we intend to put 258,000 hectares under soy production so that we can produce more soy oil cake than we do. So I think that science is there. And for the poultry sector, the red meat sector, the agriculture sector, to do all of that, this is the capacity needs that we need. So for all of those areas in that 9-point plan that the President has put out, the Department of Higher Education is driving the plan for the capacity building plan for the country. So I think we are participating in that. We're doing our work through this. So I think I'm just giving the assurance that we have and a fair idea of what is needed, but we're putting all of that together. I mean, one of the areas that honourable members mentioned is, for example, why can't the family or each region have a fish farm in Sipukati or talk about our initiatives in aquaculture? One thing that we know, for example, is that fish also have disease. And there isn't a single university in South Africa that teaches marine health for some fancy name. Nowhere can people train as whatever the fancy name is as an aqua specialist to specialize in that area. And that far there is just one guest in the entire country who's trained in that regard. So that's some of the information that we have. In terms of, I think I was putting very healthy when I said these are the divisions, this is the mandate of various departments. But in terms of working together with the other departments, I made reference to how we have worked together with the Department of Rural Development and Land Bank and DTI to put together these norms and standards. We had joint MINMEC meetings with the Rural Development. We had joint MINTEC meetings. And so we are moving that along. Part of the problem is the fact that agriculture is a concurrent function. And rural development is not a concurrent function, but are working together in order to find, because we understand the solutions that we have to drive and compelled to do as the National Development Plan. The underutilized land in tribal areas, that is a target, the fixed dialogue program that we have. And the Department of Agriculture on its own doesn't have the resources to put all of the land under production. That is what provincial departments get their equitable share, that is what they're supposed to do. Then we will say to them, this is what we expect. We have so much extra money. How much will you put under production? And we then send our people to go and monitor whether they have done. Last year, I think the target in the NDIS was 200,000 hectares of the unproductive land should be put unproductive land in communal areas. We could only do 129,000 based on our resources. But what we have to do as a national department is to take responsibility for, because we're not the only people doing agriculture. And we'll be able to report later on that in subsequent years. Now also conversations going on with tribal authorities, honorable members of the right. It is winning over tribal authorities because, we can tell you exactly where all the arable land is in the country, and that much of that high value agricultural land, it can be found in the Eastern Cape, it can be found in the Umalanga. The list of where the projects are, we're very happy to come back to some point, chairperson, because we can tell you, we can provide those lists. When the provinces give us the business plans of where their cash projects, where their land projects would be, we expect them to provide us with the coordinates because we can map it geographically where they are. And so because what we have found in the past, we've insisted on that for a few years, but because we don't track it, we would find previously some of those coordinates are in the sea. Invalid coordinates. So we are able to, if you say we have the breakdown of where this is a lot of information, but if we can come and present that. How many people with disability in the department? In this year 2014-15, 1% of the staff were people with disabilities. And I believe that is below below the threshold. Some of what my colleagues say in HR is that there are people who are reluctant to declare their disabilities. And I think you made the example, chairperson, where of your grandmother who did not view her leg as a disability. So this is the number of people who have declared their disability, and we recognize that that is below the threshold that is required. And I don't think we can, at a loss for lack of time, I think we do put it out there. The issue of extension. Occasionally, I think the honourable member said there was a time when we had very good extension services in the country. And that is true. That's why for the past, I think it's about 3 or 4 years now, where there is a national extension recovery program that has been introduced that looks at professionalizing extension workers, getting these colleagues to go to school, being registered with a professional body. There's even a IT program where we are able, if all farmers have access to internet, they should be able to put in the coordinates of where they are and know which extensions is on duty and serves a particular area. Again, through CAS, Benelima, the Sima, we annually make money available to provinces. Extensionists are employed by provinces. And we make money available to provinces to employ and grow the cadre. And again, we can show statistics of how over the 3-4 years that we have made that fund available, how the number has increased. And we will be happy to share at another time to share the policy that we're putting forward on extension services. About the LEBE funds, there were 2 questions. This one of the honourable members said it's the first time that she heard about it, and she said, I think you asked, there was a time when the fund wasn't being used and what has been done when there was some mismanagement. Yes, the fund is, since its inception, I think in 2009, Treasury has allocated about 34 million rand per annum. Now what happens is there are certain criteria that is put out. Provinces find these projects, they subject the project or the applications to the criteria which we've put out. They give it to us and we do our evaluation of it from a technical perspective, from an agricultural technical perspective. Is it feasible? Is there land? Is the land suitable for it, etc.? Then we send it to the land bank, who is our intermediary, for doing a due diligence on a business proposal. And somewhere in 2009, there was some collusion and corruption between agricultural officials and land bank officials. That matter, believe it or not, is still under investigation by the authorities. That case, so those people have been suspended for all this time, and it still has not been finalized. One official of ours has been earning a salary all this time. Because it is since, I think, 2019. And our advice was, because it was before the courts, and we could not conclude our disciplinary procedure, that was the advice that we were given. However, for 3 years, the fund was suspended because of that investigation. So the fund then became active again in 2013-14. It was lifted because new arrangements were put in place, and it was, I think, on both our side and land bank side, there was different arrangements that needed to be made. So the applications are now being considered. In fact, just last week, I signed an authorization for a person to benefit from a BEE deal, and this was workers on a farm. again, take the point that it is not well known and there are other people who could benefit from it, and we will find ways of making the public more aware of that service and that facility. The issue of monitoring of projects and its sustainability, I'm going to link it to the other question about the impact studies that were done. I think this was you who asked. The Department of Monitoring, Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation did the impact studies. They did an impact study on CAS and on MAFISA. Again, I will be very happy to come and do presentations on what the findings were. And generally, the findings on CAS, for example, was that there were some benefits that were accrued, but the project could have been, the program should have been far more effective. One of the challenges is there is fund that is distributed to 9 provinces. So the province then, with our permission, sprinkle it all over, give these small little inputs to different projects, and next year they sprinkle it somewhere else. So if they don't make investments for long enough in projects to become sustainable. Now again, what I'm learning about agriculture is that different commodities take a longer time before the projects are sustainable. I've learned, I mean, macadamia, which is a high-value commodity, high-demand commodity, you only get your first yield of nuts after 7 years. So that is how long the investment should be. Or the person who starts that age must have very, very deep pockets. Apples, the first yield you get is in 3 years. And then it takes another additional 2 years before you can import. And probably only after 8 years can you think of breaking even. So I don't believe that it is that size. If we were targeting our funds over the years according to what commodity is best grown in different provinces, we probably would have had different outcomes. So safe to say, Chair, we have taken account of all of the findings that of the MAFISA and the CAS program. And so what we are very happy to share is what are the improvement plans that, because that is going to provide a new baseline and what the improvement plans are. And I think the Honourable Member was saying there's a silo that was opened 2 years ago and that project is dead. We also have access to that research. In fact, one of the projects under SIP 11 is agro logistics and rural infrastructure. And we got one of our entities, the National Agricultural Marketing Council, to go do that research for us. But where of all these underutilized facilities are, where the silos are, where the small mills are that are not being utilized. And so if we increase maize production in a particular area where there's a silo that is under, how do we put that into use so that, in fact, the smallholder farmers around there have a storage facility? I will only think of one of us here can talk about the food gardens. I'd like to come back to you on that. We do do interventions. We are able to report on household level activity. But again, I can't say to you it is our official from National who does that. It's work that we do through the provinces. But our focus is shifting more towards the productive response of smallholders. I think at the beginning there was a question about the amounts of money that were allocated two women, I pointed out that one of the limitations in this presentation has been, I talked about the number of people who have benefited, and I said in one instance, what the value of the fund they have benefited from, I will have to come back with that information, Jay. I think the skill shortage one that we've talked to, the careers we've talked to, forestry, I mean, asked if Kasi not just to speak about women in fisheries and small-scale fisheries on our 3,000-kilometer coastline. I didn't speak about access to markets. I did not speak about the goer. I don't think it was part of the mandate here, Chair. But certainly that is what we have to drive, the access to markets. We have been extremely, extremely active in the goer to the extent that ETI relies on us completely for that. We were very happy that there was a threat earlier this year that if South Africa does not agree to the terms that the Americans are setting, they want to increase, I think they want to export 145,000 tons of chicken to us, when our total import of chickens from different countries is about 150,000 tons. There's no way that we could concede to that. But it would exclude some of our big partners like Brazil and Portugal, etc. So they threatened that they would kick us out of Africa, out of a goa, which would have a disastrous effect on and so we've been very the industry, so Chair, my colleague was the expert on this, the trade negotiator. Elaine has probably been spending for the past 6 months, 2 weeks a month in the US, because she supports Minister Davies on these negotiations. But we'll have the happy to come and present to you with something. In fact, we are able to tell you for every 20,000 that we concede can be imported, how many jobs will be lost, and what we are doing in response to it. So that information is available. I didn't bring it because, but we certainly can do that. We're very proud of our work on that area. And it seems like, ultimately, there might be political pressure that is going to push us in a particular way. You heard me say earlier, if APAC totally is a priority area, and we allow the imports from the U.S. to increase, it's going to be a disaster for our industry. I'm not going to use strong words like it's going to kill our industry, but if smallholders coming in, it will make it even harder for them. I don't know that we are influencing the curriculum at schools. On the APAC that I mentioned earlier, where higher education is looking at the education plan that the country, the capacity building plan that the country needs to grow the economy. Similarly, science and technology is looking at a science and research platform that we need to drive the economy. And they're doing that work for us in agriculture. I spoke to the Agri-BEE Fund. We can come back on the MAFISA assessment if you want that detail. Chair, land care program, it is in part of land care is funded by EWP, and part of the land care is funded through our tax program. But I think the entire program we run on EWP principles. Mm. But that's two funding sources. You talk about the specialists in our fields and in our departments. In D Chair, we are very proud of our professionals. We've got a very strong group of professionals in the department. This is a matter of interest. There is a World Organization on Animal Health, the OIE. That is a body that declared us to have a foot and mouth disease in 2011, that also declared us free of foot and mouth disease in 2014. It was confirmed again now in 2015. On Friday past, our chief space veterinarian, Dr. Botle Mike Munisani, was elected as the president of the World Body on Animal Health. And I think it was an overwhelming majority. So that's a test to, I think, the standing and the respect that our professional command in the global arena. And so I think the question is, are we making sure that our scientists and our professionals are also defining the narrative globally, but also nationally, and making that impact and adding less reliance on the outside world? Can I ask to respond to the questions on fish? I don't know. I think maybe the last one is the question was, how do we stop people from migrating from rural areas to urban areas? What difference have we made? I don't know that we can claim to say in that municipality or in that province you can see the footprint of the Department of Agriculture. Because we haven't had that regional focus. I don't believe we can make such a claim. On the one hand, if you look at some of the research, it says this rural-urban migration is a global trend. But how do we make sure that the livelihoods are assured in such a way for people in rural areas that they don't have to move, or that I get to that we've got to execute our mandate letter in order to ensure in many countries on our continent, agriculture is the mainstay of rural economy.
These people can't even talk to fish and chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I will try and really focus on this issue of fisheries and zoom into it, because I think one of the challenges that we are having as a country, even currently when the presidency was launching the Operation Pakisa, which is meant to revitalize or to boost the economic output of the ocean, I think generally if you look into that program and the conversations we are having as a country, there's a less appreciation of or recognition of the potential of the oceans. You also notice this from the conversations around the tables wherever you go, and I think as the department as well, we are still lagging behind in really talking fisheries. And I think as the members have, two members have already pointed out on the issue, what about forestry, what about fisheries? And I think it's high time we recognize this thing, that it is really the case. We are more biased and more to agriculture because of the history, of course, these two departments having come later into the agriculture, but also because of the size of agriculture vis-a-vis the size of these two. But they are very important as well. And I think also it's important that perhaps I should indicate when it comes to issues of interventions, and in particular those that are focusing on women, although I'm going to share with you a few success stories, they must not be over-glorified as successes. I think there is much more that we need to do. We are not yet doing enough. But I think it is going to take targeted interventions, Jay, to address the issues that are being faced by women. Sitting here today and talking to you, I'm a direct beneficiary of a targeted intervention that this government made in terms of finding skill and capacitating people in the marine sciences and in fisheries management in particular. And I think as DG has mentioned, in South Africa, there is no single university that teaches fisheries management. We are a branch fisheries management but there is no degree that is offered by any of our 23 universities in fisheries management. Four universities of the 23 only teaches marine science, which is part of the first degree that I did. And marine science is very general. It ranges from environmental issues to oceanographic issues to physical issues. It's very general, very broad, and it doesn't even come close to fisheries management. Now, we have a coastline of more than 3,000 kilometers as a country, and we are absolutely not maximizing on the potential and the yields that our water are giving to us in terms of the wild catch of fisheries. And we don't have enough people to take those things because, as I say, there is no university that teaches this. Government took us out to study in Norway at the University of Bergen. This was 10 years ago, and I think these were visionary people who 10 years ago foresaw that we are going to be a kind of talking oceans economy, and we're going to need people with the skills and expertise in this thing. And that program was targeting specifically black people and the women in particular. So I'm really proud, Jay, and honorable members, to say I am the product of a targeted intervention of a government official sitting somewhere when we were environmental affairs and tourism, and they took a conscious decision that we are not going to talk this, we are actually going to do it, and they did it. And it's about 30 of us that have been trained through this program. I will not talk where the others are, but I'm hopeful that we can bring them back to the department, and those that are in the department, we can really get them to do the work that they are trained for, because currently they are just administrators and pushing papers instead of doing what they're supposed to do, which is a shame. And I think we should bury our heads in shame for that. But we are beginning to appreciate that we need to reposition these people in a better way. Now, with regards to fisheries, again, it's not a popular thing, fisheries. It is not popular in our conservation, and hence it is not even going to be popular among the people who live close to the resource. But I'm proud, honorable members, to indicate to you that we have taken a decision as the department that rights holders in the mussel sector, white mussel, and in the oysters, all our rights holders from the wild coast and up to KZN to the border of Nonoji, the border with Mozambique, all the rights holders in the white mussel and in the oyster sector are women. We took a decision that we will all make them women. Not because this was a clever intervention by the department, but because when we went there, which I think is one of the things that has assisted us in managing this thing, I think sometimes the officials, we sit too much in our air-conditioned offices, and we push documents and papers that we don't have a clue what they mean to the ordinary people on the ground. So we took a conscious decision to leave offices and go to Polohamouth and all those places around the wild coast until Port St. John's and until the port of Nunavut. We found the women struggling. They are the ones that are doing mostly this harvesting. Of course, the mussels and oysters, because of how they are, they don't swim. We call them sedentary objects. Well, they stick to a rock. Now, you have to get into these rocks. Sometimes these rocks are on, during a high tide, they are submerged, and it's very difficult to harvest. During low tide, if people don't know which time to get into those rocks to harvest, a high tide can come while they are there, and they can swept away from the waters, and it becomes very dangerous. Sometimes the rocks become very slippery, depending on the salt content in the water and other organisms that are producing some mucus-like things that makes the rocks to become very slippery. Then it becomes our responsibility to educate. But now the thing is that, again, this is not a good intervention that was done by the department. This is appreciation of understanding the enormous contribution of indigenous knowledge. These women live there. They know these things. We talk about tides and reading them on the papers and whatnot. They tell you, they know. When I was doing my research, the fishermen used to tell me that, look, we look at the moon, we look at the winds, And we can tell you if you're going to get a good catch or you're not going to get a good catch. And it's true. It's something I learned. I went to do at school. They've never been to school, but they know when to deploy their nets and which sites to deploy their nets. Now, what we have done in that region of South Coast, West Coast to KZN, is to partner with them in terms of providing them with tools. Because now, as I say, this thing is stick in a rock. Usually they would use screwdrivers, and with a screwdriver, it's not very good to do the harvesting because it's hard to take that thing off. And by the time you take it off, you have maybe done some on the muscle itself, then it's not a good quality and stuff. So we kind of provided them with chisels instead, that we're kind of, you do it once and you are able to kind of lift the thing. But now the issue is that we have given all the rights holding there to women, and they are benefiting in this program in a very good way. However, now, as DG has indicated, we have got a small-scale fisheries policy that we are about to implement as a department. Now, the good thing about the small-scale fisheries policy is going to recognize the participation and increase the participation. Unfortunately, currently the act that we use in South Africa to govern our ocean space is called the Marine Living Resources Act. That act, I think it is high time we review this act as a department, because that act basically excludes a number of your vulnerable groups from the participation. First and foremost, it was only recognizing the commercial, the big commercial sectors, your INJs, your sea harvest, and everything on the commercial side. And it didn't recognize the people who live close by the resource, who are not going to do some kind of sizable harvesting of this resource, but it could be good as a source of food and as a source of income as well. So that group was not recognized in the act. So the small scale fisheries policy has then prompted for the amendment. And I think again, I think, Chair and Honourable Members, I must also point that although we boast about this implementation of the small-scale fisheries, we are ashamed because it was not us, the government, who initiated that this thing must happen. This came as a result of a court in the Equality Court. Government was taken to court by the communities living close to these resources, saying, we don't have access to the resource, we can't harvest, we can't do anything, only the allocations are given to the commercial sector. And it was because of the judgment from the Equality Court that prompted government that government should do something about that. And I'm hopeful that we are not going to be taken to court again, but we will take it upon us as the government to really relook into this act, because the women I'm talking about, they can't do processing of their harvest, because by the act, nobody can catch fish and do processing unless you get a permit to process. Now, a permit to process is called fish processing establishment. You need a fish processing establishment. Now, these women can't do the value add for these mussels that they catch and these oysters. They don't have refrigerators to freeze them and to keep them fresher for longer. They can't maybe add, but if you would look for it in the shops that are in everywhere you go, if you go to these deep freezers, you look on the section where they keep seafood, the mussels, you get them, now they open them, and they do some powder kind of thing that has got garlic and some spices, very nice stuff. They put on top of these mussels, then they freeze it. So all you do when you buy that thing, you get home in your oven, you simply put it for 40 minutes, and it's nice and it's tasty. Now these women can't do that very bad and that kind of thing, because the act forbids them in doing so. But this is history again, because also if you look at the harbors, fishing harbors that we have as a country, the only proclaimed fishing harbors, 12 of them, it's 12 in total, and all 12 are in the Western Cape. And this is history, because we deemed fishing as a Western Cape activity, but it's a national competency, and failed to recognize that in this 3,000 coastline, there needs to be some kind of proclaimed harbors, or fishing harbors as well, that can assist these people when they do their catches, they can do their processing, your freezing facilities, your cold storage, so that they can be able to keep this. But I can report also that we are in the process of discussing further with the Department of Public Works, because the harbors are kind of falling under the Department of Public Works. They have agreed, so we are now in a conversation whereby we're trying to identify further harbors to proclaim throughout the coast, and also to see how could those harbors be capacitated in terms of storage facilities, for instance, the tables for processing, so that we assist these small-scale teachers that we are going to be recognizing through this policy, but also making sure that we don't only give them access, but we also give them all that they need in terms of them participating fully into the economy. So those are the kind of things that we are doing. Also, we have partnered with SAMHSA, South African Maritime Safety Authority. SAMHSA do the seagoing courses in terms of sea safety courses. Now SAMHSA has partnered with our staff in terms of rolling out this. We have got money that we have found through the CITAS, and SAMHSA is managing that budget, and together with them we are taking a number of these women on training courses in terms of how they should behave when they are at sea. If anything that happens, how they can be able to be linked to the sea rescue program and the project that is basically in Port Edward, there is one, and in there then there is another. In Port St. John's now, we are in discussions of having another office for the sea rescue done by SAMHSA at Port St. John's, so that we can try to really try and do this thing. And also, because now we are also in the process of allocating long-term fishing rights as well. Seaweed is one of the rights that are going to be issued under long term, and we are dedicating a huge portion to give access to the women, because it's easier to harvest seaweed. And also seaweed, there's a number of things you can do. If you look at sushi, that round black belt in the sushi, that is seaweed. Seaweed can also be used for doing ice cream. Seaweed can also be used to do fertilizer, liquid fertilizer, if you do the processing of it. So there are a number of things that can be used and utilized for that. So we are taking a conscious decision as the department that when we are issuing these long-term fishing rights, seaweed is going to be added. So now we have women participating under the seaweed, under the oysters, and on the mussels. On the bigger scheme of a commercial sector, we've got small, medium enterprises that are owned by women there. Unfortunately, I do not have the statistics as yet, but we can provide the committee on the statistics of the women that are participating there. Now, the issue is that the bigger you go, the capital intensive it becomes. The boat, for instance, you need close to about 500 million to really get a very good sea-going boat that can stay at sea for a long time, do the processing, because it becomes expensive to steam a boat to deep sea, come back to offload, having to go back. It's very costly. So you kind of need, ideally, a vessel that is big enough and more powered in terms of the engine size and the capacity, so that it can stay out in the sea for a very long time, maybe 2-3 weeks, but so that it has got a processing facility while it is at sea, you are doing your filleting, your freezing and everything. So you need close to about 500 million to kind of acquire such a vessel. So we're looking at programs where we can kind of form a consortium together with the DTI. It is in partnership with us into looking at the best model that can be used to assist and grant women, because we are again saying women should not be in the periphery of harvesting seaweed and oysters and mussels. We really want their participation in deep sea fishing, but if we're going to get there, there are certain interventions that are very crucial that need to be taken and to be taken into consideration. With regard to the fish ponds, yes, I fully agree with you. We are, again, because of the history of the marine living resources and focusing on the oceans, aquaculture was mainly looking on mariculture, which is more your ocean-based aquaculture. And we didn't think about inland fisheries. The department is in the process now of finalizing the inland fisheries policy. Because unfortunately, again, because of the act, even that fish pond for you to have or the community to have, it needs to be regulated by law. Now, we don't have a law that regulates inland fisheries, so we need to put in place the inland fisheries policy, then we can be able to do inland fishing and promote it in a bigger scale. There is also the issue of state-owned dams that, again, are state-owned and can allow communities at a bigger scale to kind of do fishing. We are looking at those possibilities, but we are trying to fast-track the bill now so that we can re-get the policy, then we can be able to do those things. I fully agree with you. Fish is the most nutritious, but I think if we were to do a simple exercise around this table and ask ourselves how many times we eat fish, South Africa is not a fish.